we've reached the middle of the summer holidays, haven't we? And at this point, the idea that school is going to restart is no longer quite so far over the horizon for those of us that that affects. And of course, some people this week will get their A-level results or their AS-level results. I'm sure they're well aware of that. They don't need me to tell them that. And GCSEs next week. It's all getting quite real, isn't it? Fairly soon, some of us will definitely have to come to terms with the idea that we need to buy new school uniform. And even, you know, entirely new school uniform if we've got somebody going up to a new secondary school. There are new shoes to look for. There are new pencil cases to get. There's that awful idea of that dreadful old PE kit that is somewhere in the house and has not been rediscovered and it's unwashed somewhere. Hideous. Oh, so we've got all that to deal with. But this week, we're going to have a think about the discipleship of children, the discipleship of young people, the idea of parenting and looking after children well. And it's quite funny in a way, isn't it, that we're tackling this topic on a day when some of the youth are away. It's like we're talking about them because they're not here. But this wisdom is for all of us, you know, and what we're going to do is have a look at wisdom from Proverbs in how to bring up children well. How do we turn this wisdom that's there in the Bible into practical things that we can do to help the children that we know to do well? Not in terms of exams, you know, but in terms of their ability to thrive, their ability to go from dependence to independence and to find their way in life. Proverbs has loads of good principles, doesn't it, for good living. You can't really read it like a story. It's not like that. But it's full of gems of wisdom. And so we're going to pick out some of those today and use them. And this is one of the most famous sayings, Proverbs, from this book to do with training children. Proverbs 22. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. I think many of us will have heard of that one. That's in our heads. But in another translation, it's like this. Teach children how they should live, and they will remember it all their life. Well, having children around in our church, in our families, is a challenge and a joy, isn't it? You might be a parent or guardian. You might be an aunt or an uncle or a relative, a teacher at school or here in Sunday school or in kids or youth ministry. You might be a friend of somebody with children and you're helping them to do well in bringing up their children. And none of these things is easy. So we've just got back as a family from visiting the rest of the family, as it were, over in Singapore. So we're all really jet-lagged because it's a 13-hour flight. So, you know, if you talk to us, make it quite quiet because we're suffering. No, it's fine. But what strikes me each time that we go, that's the only place we visit, by the way. We go to Singapore, we come back, we see the family there. It's lovely to see them always. But what strikes me each time now is that travelling with the children, with our two kids, is so much more straightforward than it used to be, because such a long plane journey, of course, is not too much fun when your child is a baby of 5 months, which is when Jonathan first went to Singapore, or only 4 months in Natalie's case. Because it's not very cute, is it, for other passengers to have someone a bit cross and sad sitting near them on a flight. And that was just me. Thank you for laughing at that. But now that the kids are older, you know, they travel like I do. They eat a meal, they watch a film, they go to sleep. So much easier. And on this trip, you know, nobody was sick. Nobody got apple juice all over their seat, at least on the way back. The whole thing is just much less demanding of me as a parent than it used to be. But in other ways, as the children get bigger, they demand more. In the early days, there was a pretty short list of things that could be wrong with them. You know, they might be tired, they might be hungry, they might be bored. Those were things I could do something about. You know, I could go into school to help in the class or something. I could take them to their activities. I knew all their friends. But now that they're 14 and 11, they come up against more complicated issues. Sometimes I can't do anything practical to help them. I literally can't do things for them. I can't fix every situation that they may encounter. I can't control what they say or do. I can't control what others say to them. So how do I equip them to manage in the big world that I have to let them go into? As parents or as single people, we need help, don't we? We need help and wisdom to do that well for the children we know. Elsewhere in Proverbs, the writer calls wisdom better than silver or gold. If you find wisdom, you find life. So we actually have the best wisdom for free in the Bible. So today what we're going to do is to look at wisdom that we can use in the family, so with the children that we know, in the church family, so a little more widely, and in our society as a whole. And we're going to find wisdom in Proverbs for all of those things. So let's start with our families, the children who we are, you know, living with or who we are helping to disciple in one way or another. What are the principles we can use there? Well, as I've been reading and preparing, of greatest importance is the idea that children need priority. They're worth it. This is the time to put in the hours when they're young. And Jesus modelled love for children in a way his poor old disciples didn't quite manage, did they? Even though many of them were probably married with kids. When Jesus said, "Let the children come to me and don't stop them," he prioritised children in a way that the culture then really, really didn't. His love, he showed, is unconditional for all, including children. And psychiatrists now agree that the foundation for a good life is love. Unconditional love is so important. Just one parent or guardian who loves me is one of the greatest factors for our long-term stability. But that sounds simple, and it isn't. As we see in the proverb, it requires something from us in order to give our children a good life. We can't just be passive. We can't think love is a passive thing. We've got to do something to give our children a good life. We must intentionally disciple our children for the best outcome. So let's have a bit more of a close look at this proverb and see what we can pull out of it to help us. So the proverb says, if you can train a child or teach a child, then they will carry the principles with them through their life. If you can equip them to have discipline, to know boundaries, to be able to do things like say sorry when it's needed, then they'll carry those things with them through their life. It's not that they'll definitely know Christ. That's not the promise of this verse. And that's something that they come to decide for themselves, as we all do. But what it's talking about is a kind of pattern of behaviour. It'll serve them well if they can build relationships, if they can be accountable, and that sort of thing. And what else? It talks about how they should live, or training them in the way they should go. Now, I read about this in one of the books down there. It's very important that I realise, anyway, you probably all know this, that it's about teaching the child to go in the way that God intended, not just the way I intend. So it's no good me thinking, oh, this is how I'm going to fulfil my dream of having a doctor in the family or something. Or, for example, I've always thought it would be very cool if my daughter became a drummer. Wouldn't that be great? A drummer? I think that would be fantastic. She knows this. She'll have that look on her face that says, I'm not becoming a drummer, Mummy. In fact, she wants to play the violin, which is what I do, you know? So if I'd wanted her to become a drummer, the best thing I could have done is to become a drummer. Then we would already have had a drummer. Anyway, the idea is that you invest your time and energy as a parent or a guardian into understanding how they are built and try to grow them up in that way. It's for the good of them, you know, not of us. Thinking about the Olympics, I was reading about Bradley Wiggins, who just won that fifth gold medal in cycling, although it seems like ages ago now, even though it was only yesterday, because so many more medals have happened since then. So he said, "That wasn't my last race, but it was my last Olympic Games. My kids have never known anything other than me being an Olympic athlete, and they need me now." I was thinking about that, and how hard parenting actually is. I'm wondering if he's really thought this through. Because in cycling, you've got clear goals, haven't you? You've got time trials and league tables to let you know if you're doing things right. You've got a coach to build your confidence, tell you what you ought to be doing every day to succeed. And when you do succeed, there are medals and prizes. Well, I hope he's not thinking that you get any of that when you're bringing up children. No league tables, no coach, and certainly no prizes. But of course, he's making completely the right decision if he's talking about making a commitment to his kids and spending more time with them, the best way to show that they're valuable. He's setting them up to succeed. Now, one minister, again, who I read about in one of my some of my reading, he said, "I've met many people for whom life is not working well. They're smart, they're working hard, but life's not working because their parents didn't have wisdom. Their parents didn't help them move from dependence to independence, from irresponsibility to responsibility." So what does this wisdom in parenting look like? What is it we should be doing? Well, here's another proverb. Proverbs 22, "Folly is bound up in the heart of a child." That's a bit harsh, isn't it? But that's what it says. "But the rod of discipline will drive it far away." Many of us don't learn discipline as children. So we carry lots of bad decision-making into our adult lives. This applies to all of us to some degree. Folly then gets driven out the hard way as we struggle with the outcomes of our decisions as we get bigger. We end up saying, "If only I had," or "If only I hadn't." If our parents are able to give us the chance to make mistakes and learn from them in childhood, it's the best time to do it. But for that discipline to get in, someone loving has to do the hard work of working with us to bring out the wrong and allow the wisdom in. So this verse is not about some kind of rod of discipline like a, you know, a cane or something to beat us about the head with. It's about learning discipline, learning boundaries and limits, and knowing that there are consequences to the things that we do. And I'm very well aware that this takes discipline ourselves as parents or leaders or teachers. That's how we have to be accountable for this wisdom getting in. As parents, if we say there's going to be no computer time if some task isn't completed, we've got to follow through if that task isn't done, even if it's massively inconvenient for us to have no computer time that evening. It's at least as time-consuming for us to carry out a consequence as it is to let it go. But the time you save comes later, when the good behaviour emerges, all being well. But it's so crucial that discipline comes along with love. The foundation is love and a sense of the value of the child. It reminded me about a school class I used to help in, where there was a boy who always really struggled to do the right thing, and he always tended to be in trouble. And he had this awful trick of undermining his own achievements. So he'd start off doing a task. He'd be getting on okay, but suddenly he'd sort of be overwhelmed by despair. He would say, "Oh, I'm rubbish at this." And then he would give up, and then that would lead him into the bad behaviour again, more trouble. Well, a teaching assistant in the class worked out that one thing this boy really liked outside of the class was playing Diablo at home. I don't know if you know the thing I mean. It's a kind of spinning top on a string, and then you... I can't do it. But it's on two sticks. That's it, Sarah. Thank you. Yes, a Diablo, exactly. And you whiz it in the air. It's very clever. So the teaching assistant asked this boy to bring in the Diablo and give a demonstration. Well, it was really brilliant because it started off this whole craze of Diablo playing around school. This boy became the king of Diablo, and finally there was something he could do and help other people to learn as well. Younger children looked up to him and his Diablo skills. The teaching assistant had seen that by making this boy feel valuable and valued, it might help him understand that the world wasn't against him, that he could achieve. It was worth pushing through. It was a turning point in his behaviour. It helped him to come to terms with some of those feelings of despair that turned to anger and then trouble. Of course, I'd love to tell you that he's going to be, you know, Prime Minister or whatever, but he's only still a teenager. So my hope and prayer is that he's still got people around him who were able to have insight into those sorts of needs. Again, in Proverbs 13, it says, "The one who loves their children is careful to discipline them." But we may not have had this modelled when we were children. Indeed, I was reading more about Bradley Wiggins, and he wasn't somebody who particularly had this modelled, certainly by his dad, because the father left the family when Bradley Wiggins was only two. So, good for Bradley Wiggins for not repeating that cycle in his own family, learning from the past and going forward into a better future. But it does give us pause for thought, doesn't it? Did we learn discipline as children? Did we know, did we learn then what boundaries are good for us? As we've perhaps started to parent or help look after kids in our lives, have we found that we need to do a lot of groundwork to find the resources to do that? Have we recognised at that point that those children need something different to what we experienced? There's a great story in this book down here, The Road Less Travelled, which is a famous Christian book by M. Scott Peck, a psychiatrist. He talks a lot about the fact that life is hard. In fact, he opens the book by saying that life is difficult, and you kind of go, oh, right. But then he says, after that bad news, he says, once we realise that life is hard, actually, it becomes much easier to deal with. Just because life is hard, it doesn't mean that we're doing it wrong. It frees us up to start dealing with the reality of the situation. And of course, Jesus did assure us that in this life, you will have trouble. Life is tough. So, Scott Peck wrote this fantastic book. I do recommend it. But in his wisdom, he shared with great humility a story about his own parenting journey. He wanted once to spend more time with his daughter, who was then 14. They hadn't had much time face-to-face recently, so he put aside what he was planning to do one evening and said, let's play chess. This was one of her interests. So they started to play, fine, and Scott Peck found that he wanted to think really hard about his moves. He wanted to put effort into the game. So his daughter asked if he couldn't play a bit faster because it was a school night and she was going to have to get up early. But he wouldn't play faster. He said to her, you can't hurry a chess match. You have to take time over these things. He made it into a learning point that he was trying to get across to his daughter. She got frustrated. He dug in his heels, wouldn't budge. And she ended up storming off to bed, crying. He said to himself, you know, that didn't go well. Why did I start with the idea that I was going to bond with my daughter and end up with us further away than ever? He realised that what he'd done was to prioritise winning the game over the parenting. So the thing he realised was that he needed to stop wanting to win the chess match and to start wanting to win at parenting instead, and that might mean prioritising very different things. I suppose, coming back to Bradley again, that's what he will need to do, to go from wanting to win his gold medals to wanting to win with his kids. And I find that a really helpful perspective, to think about what it will mean, what it will take for us to win in our relationships with our children and the children that we know. It's hard work, but it doesn't mean we're doing it wrong. Winning at that kind of thing is so valuable to our children's future. So now let's consider what the Bible tells us about wisdom in looking after children within our church family. Because, of course, parents and the family are not the only place where children are influenced and can be discipled. After a certain point, their peers become more important than we are. As adults, the influence of their friends becomes incredibly significant. So here are a couple of proverbs that may have some wisdom for us. The righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. And another, Proverbs 13, he who walks with the wise is wise, and he who walks with the foolish is harmed. So here we have some wisdom about the people we hang out with. They influence us. If we want to live a disciplined life, hang around disciplined people. If we want to be foolish, hang around with fools. But I don't think that this means we desperately have to try not to associate with people who we don't consider wise or worthy or whatever. Because Jesus accepted all, didn't he? From the most lowly to the highest in society. He showed that we could all receive grace and forgiveness. But this certainly suggests that we need to be aware of how much we are influenced by those around us. And as parents and guardians, we can be careful to make ourselves acquainted with the kids our kids choose to spend time with. And I think to that we need to add as well the people that our teenagers or young people choose to watch on YouTube, choose to associate with in online settings and games. Because, of course, a child's goal or a teenager's goal isn't to be a successful adult at that point, is it? It's to be a successful child or teenager. That's a very different thing. When you were a teenager, were you hoping to be just like your mum or dad? I don't reckon you were. We wanted to fit in, didn't we? We wanted to find our people somehow. And it is quite a tribal time for many of us, our teenage years, even though it's also the time when we find our identity and separate from our family ties to become a separate individual. But this is where the church can be so helpful to families, whether or not they're part of the church themselves. We can offer young people a positive environment that's different to school and home. There are other adults here who believe in them, want them to succeed. It's one of our greatest powers to help create environments where young people can be with other young people under the presence of God, from creche through JAM, G4U2, and into the youth ministry. I also feel that church can offer a really important place for young people to discuss things they might not find they're able to with their parents, or where we as parents aren't very well equipped. You know, in questions of things like God and science, how fantastic if they can raise those questions here and examine them with an open mind. And it's an important part of the growth of teenagers to separate themselves from a faith that they may feel they've inherited and think it through for themselves, to decide in their own minds and not to feel that they're some sort of Christian clone. Church can be a place for discussion of such things, not a place where you switch off your brain, but that you use the mind God has given you. And of course, our own youth ministry here at church is developing and growing. And the beautiful thing is that the team is seeing young people become more assured of their value and significance. And that's going to be such a brilliant equipping for their future lives. So moving on to our community, how do we reach out with love to the wider community? What does that look like? How can we parent or disciple in the wider community of Banbury or wherever we live? What wisdom is there to help us here? Well, we can help create a culture that's based on the goodness of God, his truth, his trustworthiness. It's a gift to our community if we can do this. And perhaps its greatest factor is integrity in public life. Integrity is all about living in truth and reality, knowing ourselves, seeking to grow, understanding and keeping track of our motivations. Essentially, it provides us with the courage to keep going in the bad times and the power not to get carried away in the good times. It means you're trying to be true to yourself and the values that you have taken on. So, of course, integrity is vital in healthy leadership, and emotional health should be what we strive for, and it is what we strive for in our church team. We have proverbs that encourage us here. Whoever walks in integrity walks securely. And this one, the integrity of the upright will guide them. But how can we help integrity to be the experience of children and families outside of church? Certainly, it seems to me that in the past few months, there's been a kind of overall lack of taking responsibility in our society. There's been a sense of a lack of accountability. We've had such a rash of resignations, you know? People in power just dropping like flies, and all the political parties in some ways failing to step up to lead us. I think it's a bit telling, you know, that the most reliable person, apparently currently in British life, public life, is Gary Lineker, because he kept his promise to wear his pants on Match of the Day yesterday. Or were they shorts? I don't know. Responsibility and accountability sound hard, and they are hard, but it's what's required. And even in our one congregation here, we have loads of people who are already involved in trying to make Banbury a place where families and children can have faith that there are leaders who have integrity to help them make their lives a success. We've got teachers and teaching assistants, people working in commerce and business, loads of people in the NHS, as we saw the other week, people working in charities, volunteers in lots of areas, people serving throughout society in different ways. One of my roles currently is that of chair of governors at one of our local secondary schools, Banbury Academy. You may know that the school has been through some really difficult times, especially over the last couple of years. Well, although I've served as governor there for the last year, I didn't expect to become chair of governors. I thought that this nice lady called Lisa was going to do the job, but she couldn't do it ultimately, and it fell to me, and I was pretty overwhelmed. I wanted to do a good job. I felt it could be significant. But honestly, who was I to think that I could? Governors have less responsibility than they may have done in the past, but the community, rightly, expects a lot from us, and I didn't want to let them down. I actually, and I do recommend this, I had a big meltdown in church about it. And wonderful Margaret came, and I only realised this morning, Margaret, that that was God continuing to parent me, that you helped me to see how I could go forward in the role in a healthy way, in a way where I wasn't trying to overstep my responsibility. I was going to do it hand in hand with God. And that was parenting. Just realised. Well, the good news is that 4 weeks before the end of last term and the summer holidays, a new head teacher came to join the school. And she is already bringing in new ways of working that build up our students, that reach out to parents and make the staff feel valued. We've got a long way to go, but those are the foundations of integrity, meeting the demands of reality and working to the benefit of the young people. And I'm well aware, I think, that my role as chair of governors has, you know, limits around it. I'm not a teacher, I'm not a school leader, but I am a volunteer who can support integrity when it's there. And, you know, I feel already that the Proverbs are playing out when they say that guidance and security are on offer if you are walking in integrity with clear motives. So I have one example to share of that. So one evening before the end of term, I'd arranged to take the new head teacher, who's called Sylvia, to a small gathering at the Reindeer in town, you know, the pub there. We were going to meet some other parents. This was sort of a bit of a risk for me because I had to step out of my comfort zone, really. It's trying to start a new culture, a new ability for us within the governor team and the school team to relate on a much closer level than we've ever had before. So this was I had to step out to do this. Sylvia had been in Banbury for about 3 weeks, so she was happy to come along. That was great. She's a sportswoman, actually, and she doesn't drink alcohol. But she was happy to go to this historic pub in town. And as you probably know, I'm not a sportswoman, and I do drink alcohol. So I was happy too. So, en route to meeting Sylvia down in the pub, who should I see on Parson Street but Stefan and Shannon? Shannon leads our youth ministry here. They were chatting with some other church people. And it suddenly occurred to me, hello, Holy Spirit, that Shannon had had a meeting earlier in the week with somebody at Banbury Academy to talk about some collaborations. So perhaps this was a chance for her to come in and just say hi to Sylvia. So Shannon took the initiative and came in to meet her. And I'm not joking when I say that straight away they found common ground over discussing team building and how you grow trust between colleagues. Essentially, the conversation was all about integrity and how to develop it. The other school parents joined us, and Stefan came in too, and a good evening was had by all, and I think some good relationships were made, which we'll be able to build on. And I've learned, of course, from that experience that when we take a risk in integrity, we grow. There's one more proverb that relates to integrity, and it's this. A righteous man who walks in integrity, how blessed are his sons after him. And as you can imagine, this is my prayer for Sylvia as she leads our school community, that all those sons and daughters in the school will be blessed through the integrity of a good leader. And for me, that I can work out what it means to support and nurture integrity as we negotiate our way through the school year, which is definitely going to include troubles and challenges. And this can be our prayer for all school leaders in Banbury, in the schools, in the council, in our trusts, in our academies. And it can be our prayer for all the youth and kids leaders in the churches, and for all of us as parents and supporters of children, as we lead, as we listen to children, as we love them to become all that they can be. So why don't we just close by praying together for our children and our leaders and all of our families in Banbury. Lord Jesus, you've shown us so much wisdom in Proverbs. We thank you that people have interpreted that wisdom for the way that we need to parent and lead children now. And Lord, we pray that through your wisdom, we will do a good job. And when all we can do is pray, Lord, that you will keep us faithful to that too. We thank you for the wisdom of Proverbs, Lord. Amen.